From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Well, it's a race against time for the folks behind the honor flights. Time is not on their side as they see thousands of aging veterans die every year. The goal is to fly as many of these veterans as possible to Washington, D.C., to see in person the monuments honoring their service to the country. The first honor flight took place in 2005, when six small planes ferried a dozen veterans to the nation's capital. The honor flight program is now nationwide, including a chapter in southern Indiana. Each honor flight is an emotional event for the veterans, their families, and the volunteers who make it all happen. Now here's one story about a recent flight in May of 2019. A World War II veteran, 95 years old, suddenly dies while headed home to San Diego after a flight to D.C. It was reported two physicians on board, including the veteran's own son, tried unsuccessfully to revive him. Those on the plane say the veteran was chatting and laughing and then suddenly collapsed. His body was soon covered with an American flag, and the plane filled with the song, as everyone sang, "God Bless America." Well, my guests are Larry Rogers, Corporate Outreach Director of Honor Flight Southern Indiana, and later we'll be joined by Ray Beckwith, a Korean War veteran who was aboard Honor Flight No. 4 out of Evansville. So, Larry, let's start with you. Welcome to 2 Main Street. Now, that story about the 95-year-old veteran who died on an honor flight, it's, well, the health and well-being of these aging veterans has to be a major concern when you plan these flights.
Absolutely, yes. Good morning, David. It's good to be here, but you know, we're constantly having veterans pass away, which is very unfortunate. It's just something that we're all going to unfortunately do. But we have about 500 veterans currently on our waiting list, and we're trying very desperately to get them all on the flights. And we know that there's some out there that we haven't reached yet that we'd like to get applications for and get them in the list and get them scheduled to get on a flight, hopefully fairly soon.
Now, is there any kind of medical staff on board?
We do. We have, to back up just a little bit, we take about 85 veterans in the spring and 85 in the fall. We take two flights a year. And we have, once we get to Washington, D.C., we break down into four really nice 50-passenger buses. And each bus has a medical staff that's a volunteer that's usually from St. Mary's or St. Vincent's or one of the organizations here close to us. But we make sure that we have plenty of staff. We can accommodate almost any kind of a medical condition. That's what we charter ourselves to do, is make sure we can take just about anybody. We've taken them completely immobile in wheelchairs. We've taken them on oxygen. We've taken blind. A lot of them are deaf or hard of hearing. We've taken some that have some dementia issues, not severe dementia issues, but we've had some that's pretty significant. As long as they're not violent or don't have a history of violence, we can take those as well. So we try to accommodate any veteran.
Now, I understand you've been a member of the Honor Flight Board since 2014, and you started out as a Blue Bus Captain. What is that, Larry?
Like I said, we take a whole chartered plane. We take 85 veterans, 85 guardians, and a staff. One of the staff members, of course, is the president. We take four bus captains. When we get to Washington, D.C., we don't have a bus big enough for 200 people, so we break down into four 50-passenger buses, and I was one of the bus captains. And we just try to make sure that everybody gets back on the same bus and accommodate them in every way that we can. We make sure that they know what time they have to be back on the buses, because they get their free leisure time to walk around the memorials and different stuff. So it's just trying to make sure that everybody gets right back on the same bus and gets back to the next memorial so that we can continue the trip.
Now, you are a veteran yourself.
I am.
Now, did that motivate you to do this?
It's one of the many things that motivated me to do this. About half of our staff is veterans, but the other half is not. A lot of people get involved for many different reasons. I am an Army veteran, joined the Army and Army National Guard, and retired after 23 years, but I certainly enjoy it, enjoy being around with the veterans and being around with the other volunteers that we have. Most of our volunteers are not veterans, but they have a family member or somehow involved with us, and we appreciate every veteran that we have.
When was the first honor flight out of Evansville?
It was fall of 2014. So we were actually about 10 years behind some other parts of the country and a few years ahead of a few others, but there's around 130 hubs. And It took us about 6 months or so to get the first flight off the ground once we became a not-for-profit status.
Now, of course, this program, the Honor Flight Program, has grown over the years into all these chapters all around the country. And you said that there is a waiting list?
There is. We've taken about 700 total veterans. We just finished our 11th flight, fortunately, here this past October. We get about 85 on a flight. We have approximately 500 on the list to go. We simply just take them strictly from the oldest to the youngest. So the last flight, the average age was about 84 years old, somewhere in that neighborhood. So if you're in approximately 84 years old, you'll probably be one of the first ones called on the next flight. We're always receiving new applications. We receive applications every week, fortunately, to media outlets like this one. So people know they can sign up, and we're still taking applications. Last flight, we took, I believe, six World War II veterans that we had just recently received. Between May and October flight, we received a few more of those and got those on the flight. We do also bump up anybody that's in hospice or medical condition that won't make it till their scheduled flight. So we do have some, say, younger veterans that might be Vietnam veterans with Agent Orange issues or who knows what other issues, and we bump them up and get them on the next available flight as well. Other than that, it's just strictly by age.
We're talking to Larry Rogers with the Honor Flight of Southern Indiana. So, Larry, this the first flight, were you on aboard that first flight?
I was on the first flight. I wasn't a bus captain. I was actually a guardian.
What is a guardian?
Every veteran has a guardian, and the guardian's purpose on the flight is basically to make sure that the guardian's well taken care of, because you have a very small staff on the flight as well, and the medical people are focused on maybe just a few veterans that need special attention. So if you can imagine, most of the time when you're taking a photo, you're not in those photos. So the guardian is taking photos of the veteran at the memorials, doing whatever they need. If the veteran needs any special needs, any meal requirements, assistance in and out of a wheelchair, if they need pushed in the wheelchair all day long. Many veterans like Ray here certainly are very mobile and can get around just fine, and it makes it easy on the guardian. But sometimes the guardians have a very busy day, and sometimes they have an easy day. But
now, that's a long day.
It is a very long day.
When does it start?
It varies depending on when we can get the chartered flight through the airport, but it's usually very early. Usually starts about 5 or 5:30 in the morning. We get the veterans there, get them through security and checked in as soon as we can, and get them on the flight. It takes a little bit longer to get 80 and 90-year-olds on the flight than it does your average flight time. So it takes us about an hour, hour and a half to get them all on the flight. On the plane. It's a very nice short flight. It's only about an hour and 15 minutes to Washington, D.C. Again, about another hour to get everybody off the flight through the Reagan Airport and to the buses. We load up on, like I said, four really nice chartered buses. From there we go. We have police escorts. They have all the roads shut down for us. If it wasn't for the escorts that we have, we couldn't see everything that we do in one day. So we go to the World War II Memorial first, typically, and primarily reason there is because when we first started, we had a much more World War II veterans on there than what we do now. But not only that, but the Korean Memorial is so condensed, it's really difficult to get that many people there. So not everybody goes there to get their photos and that kind of stuff. That it's really more of the photos and the photo opportunities happen at the World War II Memorial.
And World War II Memorial is relatively new. It's 2004, I believe, when it was dedicated.
Exactly, yes. It was created in 2004, and that's kind of why Honor Flight didn't really start until 2004 and 2005, because there was a big I don't know what you call it, the grand opening of the World War II Memorial was on televised, and it was on television. And in Springfield, Ohio, there was some veterans that were in a nursing home, and they said, you know, that's something unfortunately we'll never be able to see because we're in a nursing home and just can't get there. Well, the staff at the nursing home created that first six flights and took them there. So Honor Flight was really started because World War II veterans at the time were average age was in their 90s, probably retired, most likely living on limited income, may or may not have some medical issues. It's very difficult for somebody that has 80 years old on limited income in a wheelchair to make it to Washington, D.C.
I understand that I saw one statistic that 4.6 million visitors visited that memorial in 2018. So that's an incredible response.
Yes, it's very, very well attended every time we go. So that's good. And usually when Honor Flight is there, I say Honor Flight of Southern Indiana, there might be as many as 6 to 12 other hubs there at the same time. So there's an Honor Flight network out of Ohio and Washington, D.C. that actually helps coordinate when we can be at the memorials, when we can go to the Changing of the Guard at Arlington National Cemetery, and when we can do different stuff. So it's very well coordinated so that every veteran gets the best opportunity to see everything there.
So how long do the veterans stay at each stop?
We're at each stop approximately an hour and a half, a little bit shorter at the Air Force Museum. All of that is dependent on just the flight schedules and when you can be there. And for Evansville, well, Southern Indiana, we're about as far west as you can go and do it in one day. For instance, California and some of them, they actually spend a whole day flying there. They're at the memorials overnight. Stay there the next day, and then they fly back the next day. So it's a three-day trip if you're flying from the far west. If you're flying from Florida or northeast or from the Midwest, it's usually a one-day trip.
So what are the stops, the usual stops?
The usual stops are usually the World War II Memorial is generally first. We leave there, and we take a bus tour, which includes a drive by the White House, Smithsonian, Ford's Theater, and at the same time they get their lunch on a nice box lunch on the bus. We leave there and we go to what we call the Trinity, which is the Korean, Vietnam, and Lincoln memorials. We park there. So if you got a Vietnam veteran or Korean veteran or whatever veteran, they can spend a little bit more time if they choose at either one of those two memorials. But we're at all three of those for about an hour and a half. We leave there and we go to Arlington and see Changing the Guard. Again, we go by a lot of different things. We drive by the Pentagon, drive by the CB Memorial, several other things, the Iwo Jima Memorial. And then we finish it off by stopping by the Air Force Memorial, which actually wasn't there during September 11th, 2001. It wasn't there then, but it's now in the flight path of where the plane impacted with the Pentagon. But it's a very nice memorial to stop by and see, and we stop there, and then we go back to Reagan and get on the plane.
You pack a lot in a day there.
We do. It's very, very busy. Yes.
Then you get back on the plane and fly home.
We fly home, and we have a really nice, what we call a welcoming home parade, and the community support has been outstanding. We have anywhere from 2,500 to 3,500 people at the airport. We unfortunately kind of overwhelm the airport for anybody else that happens to be flying through at the time. But we have a very nice parade, and that's very special, especially to the Vietnam veterans that get a welcome home parade that may not have gotten one when they came home the first time.
Larry, a lot to talk about. Now, coming up, we're going to be joined by Korean War veteran Ray Beckwith. He's going to join our conversation. We'll share his memories of that honor flight, his honor flight number 4. Also, we'll talk about the fellowship with the other veterans that you meet at the airport, and also how this is all funded. So somebody's got to pay for this, a chartered airplane and the buses and everything else involved. So a lot to talk about. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management, guiding clients through all stages of their financial lives to help them achieve long-term peace of mind. Details at BergerWealthServices.com.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and we're talking about the Honor Flight Program of Southern Indiana, part of a national network to fly older veterans to see the monuments in their honor in Washington, D.C. Packed day, as we heard from my guest, Larry Rogers, who's the Corporate Outreach Director of Honor Flight Southern Indiana. Ray Beckwith joins us now. He's a Korean War veteran. And Ray, you were on flight number 4 out of Evansville to the nation's capital. Had you seen those monuments before?
No. No, that was my first trip up there. I had stationed on the East Coast and had a number of chances of going to Washington, D.C., but never took it.
Of course, a lot of these monuments are relatively new.
Well, they didn't have the monuments at that time. But, yes, it was very impressive.
Now, did you go on this flight with other Korean War veterans?
Yes, there were some other veterans on there. I don't remember how many we had at that time, but there were some on there, and I was very privileged to have been able to make that flight,
mm-hmm.
and it just blew my mind for the things that happened and the way everything went off. It was great.
So, did you get a chance to talk to your fellow veterans on board the flight?
And yes, I did. I had met some that had actually been in Korea and fought in the war and had been wounded or whatever. And it was very, like I said, very touching, very interesting.
Now, you were a Marine Corps.
In the Marine Corps, right.
And you were a sergeant, is that correct?
Yes.
What did you do in the Marine Corps?
Well, I had, at one point, I was sergeant of a 4.2 mortar squad. And we had, at part of the time, I was a property sergeant for the company that took care of all the weapons that we used or had available for us. And we had, most of the time, though, I was a squad leader.
Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't go actually to Korea, correct?
No. I went the other way to the Mediterranean for 7 months or so. They having a little trouble over there, and they had sent our unit, which was the 8th Marines, and we went over there for that period of time.
Where were you stationed in the Mediterranean?
Well, we were aboard ship.
Oh, okay.
We made stops at Gibraltar. We made stops in France, Italy, Greece. We trained on the island of Malta and Crete. We were training a Greek army boot camp while we were there, and it was very interesting. Matter of fact, it was almost like a war zone because on the two islands, they had the Germans had them at one time, and we took them, and then they got it back, and there were live shells, bombs, that had been dropped but mm-hmm. did not go off. They did not explode. And because of that, I mean, we had to be very careful when we were in the mountain area mm-hmm. With the training.
Mm-hmm. Now, you enlisted in what year?
In September of 1950, right after the Korean War started.
Are you an Evansville native?
Yes. And I had, after boot camp at Parris Island, South Carolina, we went up to Camp Lejeune and had volunteered to go to Korea. And it seemed like it was always picked over, and they sent the other troops out, and there were 12 of us that stayed back, and we would train the new batch of troops that were coming in from boot camp. And they had 10 to 12 weeks of training there, and then they would have a 10-day leave to go home and on their report back to San Diego for their trip across.
Well, the Korean War, of course, is known as the kind of the forgotten war, the unknown war. It's sandwiched between World War II and the Vietnam War. But it was a terrible conflict and so many casualties. And, of course, it was in the height of the Cold War. North Korea invaded South Korea, and then going the back and forth, and all these Korean cities, I think, were pretty well demolished during the battle, and a lot of civilian casualties as well. And, of course, there's still problems in Korea right now. The DMZ is still hot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's still a problem area after all these years, Ray.
Yeah, I had, training with some of the new recruits for 10 or 12 weeks. I mean, you got pretty close to some of them. And they knew they were going to go to Korea once that training was completed. And we would get word back through the grapevine, I guess you'd say, of certain ones that had lost their life over there. And when I was on the honor flight and at the Korean monument, I was looking for names of some that I had remembered that I had trained with. And I got choked up. I really did. I mean, it was just, I mean, things that that you see up there, and then just the way everything turned out.
Well, the Korean War Memorial, I think it was dedicated in 1995. I think that's what I got here.
It should have been 1993. It should have been the 50th anniversary of the ending of the Korean War.
Now, that's near the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes.
Right? And it's on the West Potomac Park, I believe. And there were, of course, that was United Nations action. And it also honors the United Nations soldiers who also died in that conflict. But I think 90% of the military effort in the Korean War was the U.S. Yep. military. So anyway, Larry Rogers is here. He's the corporate outreach director of the Honor Flight. And I guess these are interesting. All these stories are very interesting to you.
I hear some of the greatest stories. And I was talking to a veteran. I can't remember if it was Flight 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever, but I was asking him, I said, what unit were you in? He said, I was in the 82nd. I said, so you were in the 82nd Airborne, huh? He says, well, yes and no. He says he was in the 82nd, but he was in the 82nd before anybody had ever jumped out of an airplane before. So it wasn't known as the 82nd Airborne back then. He was in from 38 to 41, I think, and got out right at the beginning of World War II. So some of the stories that you hear, just they're mind-boggling, and it's just great to talk to all these veterans.
Well, you see the sudden fellowship, I guess, when these guys get together.
Absolutely, absolutely.
They all have a common bond. They've all been in wearing a uniform, and they've known about buddies that may not have made it back.
Yeah, and a lot of the stories, just like Ray's story, you know, even though he wasn't necessarily in Korea, we're Honor Flight of Southern Indiana, we're not a VFW. You don't have to have been in combat to be on an honor flight. We want to honor everybody just as equally, from people that were in payroll and supply and mess are just as important to us as the people that were in combat. And they might have been both. But you don't have to be a combat veteran to be on an honor flight.
I think one of the honor flight, I went on the website of the honor flight, and they quote Will Rogers, the I guess comedian and author and commentarian. He says, we can't all be heroes. Some of us have to stand on the curb and clap as they walk by.
That's absolutely right.
Definitely. So, okay, now the veterans are gathering at the airport, and the family members are seeing them off. That has to be very emotional for both the farewell and the welcome home.
Yeah, we actually, as soon as the veterans get at the airport in the morning, we try to get them on the plane as soon as we can. So family members are welcome to come in the morning, but we actually don't encourage that because we try to get them on there as soon as we can. But we absolutely encourage family members to be there in the evening. And we've had veterans that have more family members than you can count. I don't know how many they've had, but probably upwards of 30 or 50 family members there. And then some veterans don't have very many at all. But, you know, it's really nice to have such a great community support for everybody when you get back.
I think we've all seen the video of the people with the signs and everything, and they're all in the patriotic outfits and waving the flags and everything. And, Ray, that had to – did you experience that when you got off the plane?
Yes, but, you know, the when we arrived in Washington, the number of people that were at the airport to greet us up there, I mean, that it's just – I just can't put it into words.
And these were strangers.
These were strangers that didn't know us, but they were lined up through that airport, both sides, waving American flags. And I get started talking about that, I still get choked up on that situation.
Well, I guess that's the whole idea.
Yeah, Honor Flight Network does a really, really good job of getting people there. They actually have bands, sometimes high school bands or even professional bands are there doing patriotic songs. They have anywhere from 50 to a couple hundred people there, and they might even have a few people from the Pentagon. You might have a few dignitaries from the Pentagon mm-hmm. there welcoming people to Washington, D.C. So Honor Flight Network has really done a very, very good job at the Washington, D.C. end.
So each flight is a major event. A lot of planning involved, I'm sure.
We feel like it is, yes.
So when does the planning start for these flights?
It starts a little bit over a year in advance. We were already planning most of the stuff for the next May flight. Mm-hmm. So the first Saturday in May will be our next flight. Mm-hmm. We already know that we'll have a flight next fall. We're trying to confirm what the dates will be for that with the charter companies. We bid that out, but it's typically American Airlines usually wins them, but it could be Southwest or Delta or United or any of them. But American Airlines has been very, very supportive, and they've given us some really good dates for coordinating our next flights.
So the pilots and the crew and the attendants are all American Airline employees then?
They have been on the last several flights, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an American employee, but they say that they have to go through a lottery to get it, and they're
really?
All really, really happy about getting on uh-huh. that flight. So they're very appreciative of being on the flight, and that makes it even more special for the veterans.
Well, sure, sure. Now, when these veterans get on board the plane, and are they kind of instructed on what's going to happen? Is there like a briefing?
Not necessarily on the plane. We have what we call a meet and greet the Thursday before the flight. That's the first time we have all the veterans and guardians together, because lots of times we might be interviewing them. And I say interview a very loose term. We don't interview them to disqualify them. We interview them to make sure that we can accommodate whatever medical concerns, issues, whatever they have, so that the staff can accommodate them on the flight is what the interview's for. It's more of an interview of them for us.
Okay.
We get them together, and that's where they get almost all their instruction. And the day of the flight, it's really just them having fun.
Yeah. Now, Ray talked about the emotional experience he had standing in front of the Korean War Memorial. Of course, there's the Vietnam Wall, which is has all kinds of stories behind it, and people leave mementos there at the wall. And did you witness any of that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of our guardians, even though they're not the dignitary veteran on the flight, a lot of our guardians are actually service members as well. You see a lot of veterans and guardians and staff members all break down at different times. It's just magical how some things happen when they do, and it's not really planned. It's just the way it occurs.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming up, how our listeners can get involved in the Honor Flight program. I know you need a lot of support to keep this going, and you want to keep it going as
Absolutely.
Long as possible. And also the message, we all serve. I hear that a lot from the Honor Flight folks. And we're going to talk some more with Ray Beckwith, the Korean War veteran. This is 2 Main Street, and I'm David James. 2 Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Stay with us.
Support for 2 Main Street with David James comes from listeners like you and from Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management, guiding clients through all stages of their financial lives to help them achieve long-term peace of mind. Details at BergerWealthServices.com.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you're just joining us, my guests are Larry Rogers. He's the Corporate Outreach Director of Honor Flight of Southern Indiana, which sends veterans to our nation's capital to see the monuments in their honor, and Ray Beckwith, a Korean War veteran who was on flight number 4 out of Evansville, Honor Flight. And Ray, you were saying that your guardian on the flight was a family member.
Right. It was my son was on the sheriff's department at the time, and I had asked him if he would be my guardian, and he jumped on that one right away.
I bet.
And it was good that I was able to get around without a wheelchair, so he jumped in and helped some of the others on and off of the bus that were or that needed wheelchairs, you know. But he really enjoyed it. I think he enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well, he got to share this with you, and I'm sure that was very important to him, definitely. So, Larry Rogers, how many flights have you been on?
I have been on 6. I was on the very first flight, EVV-1. I was not on 2 because that was my 30th wedding anniversary, and my wife said no, basically. But then I was on 3, 4, 5, 6, all as a bus captain, and then I was on 8. So I've enjoyed every one of them.
What's your favorite stop on the Washington, D.C. tour?
My favorite stop is probably changing the guard. Honor Flight of Southern Indiana is fortunate enough to have been able to put a wreath there on 3 different flights.
This is at Arlington.
At Arlington, yes, and just seeing all the tombstones, the buses park right next to Audie Murphy's gravestone, and there's lots of different things that you get to see there, and it's pretty magical there.
Oh, they take you to the different famous people that are interred there?
You get to walk around there. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily take you there. It's all pretty close in proximity of what you get to see, but. As Ray said, even though you have a bunch of veterans that can walk around fine on their own, we ask them all to take a wheelchair. If they're in a wheelchair, they get to sit right up front and get a first-class view. So we highly promote veterans to be in a wheelchair at Arlington, whether you need one or not.
Now, the message, we all serve, what does that mean to you, Ray? Ray and Larry.
Really what it means is you know, kind of what it says, that you can serve at every capacity. So our veterans help out in some way. The ones that are in combat certainly serve, but the ones that were not in combat certainly serve just as well. Our volunteers serve. Our staff members, we try to make sure that we all serve in some capacity. So whatever you can do to try to help continue the mission on.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ray, what's your takeaway from this whole program, the Honor Flight? What did you get from all of this?
Gosh, so many things that just the way the whole program, I think, is great. And I've talked it up. I've had talked with some friends of mine that, they can't, they would never be able to do this for some reason or whatever. And a couple times that I've been out there when these flights have returned, I've had a number of friends. Well, Larry, you said about the wreath, mm-hmm. at the
Arlington.
One of a good friend of mine was one that carried a wreath up there. So, I mean, it's probably more meaning for me when I've actually got real friends or close friends that I know that are on that flight. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's great what they're doing.
Well, it sounds like it's so professionally run.
You're right.
It has to be to do all of this. I mean, the logistics involved are incredible when you think about it. You've got a lot of these people who are in wheelchairs or on walkers and some health conditions, and you're getting them all together for this really kind of, well, not hectic, but it's a packed day, Larry.
It is. And we don't want the veterans to feel like they have to find their own guardian. We have a lot of volunteers in the community that are willing to step up. So we have, if we have a veteran that's in a nursing home or whatever, and he's outlived his family members and he doesn't have anybody that's willing to go with him, that is not a problem. We have so many volunteers from the community that are willing to step up and be able to push them around all day long and see them whatever they want to see.
So it takes an army, I guess, and a Marine Corps, and
we have
everybody
hundreds of volunteers.
Definitely. So how can people get involved, Larry?
The easiest way is just to go to our website, honorflightsi.org, and the SI is just abbreviation for Southern Indiana, honorflightsi.org. Up at the top, there's an apply button. You can apply to be a veteran on the flight. You can apply to be a guardian on the flight. You can apply to be a volunteer. We need a lot of volunteers to help receive people in the morning of the flight day, the welcome home parades, lots of fundraisers throughout the year. We were just up at the Patoka Lake 5K just Saturday. We're somewhere just about everywhere through the week, so we need lots of volunteers to help us out.
Yeah, your title, Corporate Outreach, what does that involve?
So I'm about 50% of our donations come from corporate donors and about 50% come from private and individual donors. So I'm focused more on the corporate donors, so I reach out to the larger companies to see if they wouldn't mind sponsoring some veterans or, for instance, Toyota, fortunately, they sponsored the entire flight last time. So it was very fortunate for us. They sponsored Flight 9 and Flights 11, so they've done two whole flights recently.
I'm just curious. I don't know if you can say that. What would it cost to charter a plane?
The whole flight all in is just a little bit over $100,000. We take 85 veterans, and we have gotten it down to the guardians all pay their own way. So the funding that we do is basically just for the veterans. So if you're considering giving a donation to Honor Flight, the donation does go to the veteran. The guardian pays their own way. And so about out of the $100,000, about $50,000 of it we have to fund. And we do that through a lot of different ways. We have a wheelchair sponsorship program. We have lots of other fundraisers throughout the year. And a lot of it just comes from people like Ray that have promoted us and they go on the flight and they love it and they want to give back and they give us a check for the veteran on the next flight, which oddly enough, is how we get a lot of our funding.
Larry, tell us about some of the people you've met on the flight over the past few years.
I've met some great veterans everywhere from Marines to Army. We've had some Coast Guard veterans. I just enlisted or signed up a Coast Guard veteran for the last flight, and he was a member of a church that I went to, and he actually has almost all of his brothers are also in the Coast Guard, so we're going to try to get all of them signed up. But I've met veterans that were in D-Day, and I've met veterans that have went through the Battle of the Bulge, and I've met through veterans that have gone through what we call the training corps and stayed home and trained people to go through all these other places, and you just see every walk of life. And what's kind of funny is I've seen several different Air Force veterans that had never actually been on a flight, and I was joking around with them, how can you be an Air Force veteran and never been on a flight before? And he said I joined the Air Force and they put me on a boat and took me out to the island of Leyte or Leyte, yeah, or however you pronounce it, and he was refueling planes as they were coming,
sure,
in and out, and he just never actually got on a flight. So
amazing.
Honor Flight was his first flight. But just the stories that you hear are just kind of crazy.
And, of course, some of these people that you've met have passed on.
They have, unfortunately. It's almost a weekly occurrence that we Honor Flight posts on our website and our Facebook page that, unfortunately, a veteran has passed away. And it's also very unfortunate. So if somebody's in the list to be an applicant to get on a flight and if we don't know about it, if somebody's become very, very ill, we'll try to get them on the next flight. So please keep us posted.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, almost all of us have had a veteran in our family. I know my dad served in World War II, and along with my uncle, and my brother served in the Air Force. And this Honor Flight is a way to salute not only the people serving now, but those who have served in the past. So it's something we can all get involved in, and I'm sure that's your message.
Absolutely. And we have fortunately had great community support. If you've ever been to the airport on the day that we have the Honor Flight, we literally have signs all over the place from the State Highway Department telling them where to park and where to go, because it's just almost overwhelming how many people show up. So that's good.
Ray Beckwith, Korean War veteran, is also with us here. So you're on that flight now to Washington, D.C. On the way back, after you've seen all of the monuments and everything, how was that flight back to Evansville?
Well, it was great. I mean, they had the mail call, which prior to the flight, people, in the case of a friend of mine, his daughter had sent me a note that he was going to be on a certain flight, and would I send a card or whatever, and I took one out to Mission Barbecue, where they mentioned where you could drop them off, you know. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they gave me a stack of mail, and I was trying to open some of them when I was on the way home. And
so they call it mail call.
It's mail call. It seemed like no time at all. We were getting ready to land, you know. And of course, the great amount of people that were there. I don't know. It's for me, it's just hard to explain to see that many. Like Larry said, I mean, you know, 2,500 to 3,500 people come out there at airports. Pretty crowded.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and mail call is a really good program that we have. We have some people like Ray that's got great family support that gets lots of letters. And you have a few, like I said, that might be in a nursing home or somewhere, and they don't get the support that everybody else does. But we have so many elementary schools, middle schools, high schools write letters, just plain generic Dear Veteran letters. So regardless of how much family support each veteran has, we literally give them 100 to 200 different little pieces of mail or letters, or maybe it might just be a thank you veteran on a flag, a hand-drawn flag by a fifth grader or something like that. And those are just so special. And the last couple of flights, we've received so many that we give them one bag on the flight, and then once they get back to the Evansville airport, we give them all the rest of them, because we have so many that we literally can't take them on the flight. But we really appreciate the support we get from that, especially the elementary and middle schools.
Mm-hmm. I understand there's some music played, too, sometimes.
There's music on the flight. American Airlines does a really good job of decorating the airplane. We play music on the flight, and we don't plan it, but many times there's been choirs or something like that that actually at the memorials. There was a choir from Texas that sang God Bless America at mm-hmm. the World War II Memorial. It was just mind-boggling how good they were. But we don't plan that. There's just some of the things happen, and it just makes the day perfect.
You're right.
On our flight coming home, one piece of mail that I had received was from a six-year-old girl from Cedar Hall School.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote me a real nice letter. Wanted to know why I joined the service, where I went, mm-hmm. and what did you do, and things like that. And I had an address that she had put in there, but I couldn't make out if it was a home address or what. So I wrote a short note, and I had with her name on it, and sent it out to Cedar Hall School. But that was, to me, was real impressive that a six-year-old would ask those type of questions. And, I mean, and then I thought, well, I had to answer that one. and you appreciate everyone that you get, but there are just some that stand out a little bit more than mm-hmm. what most of them do.
Well, anytime you have a gathering of these veterans from Vietnam, Korea, and World War II, it's a living history lesson for everyone. And they can share their stories, and people can understand what this country went through and the sacrifices of these men and women.
And women, yes. The women that we have, we always enjoy it when we get a female veteran on the flight. It just makes it so great. We had Imogene on one flight, and we've had many other veterans that were female, and it's always fun when we get one of them.
Mm-hmm. So how many of you female veterans have you had, do you think?
Off the top of my head, on 11 flights, somewhere probably close to 15 to 20.
Mm-hmm. Now, your from Southern Indiana. That's your chapter, right?
Yes.
So how far do you go out?
We go as far east as Tell City. We go as far north, Orange County, up past Lagodi, mm-hmm. Vincennes area, Jasper area. We go all the way west to the Wabash River, so you know all of Mount Vernon and Posey County. So mm-hmm. we don't solicit veterans in southern Illinois and western Kentucky, but obviously if it makes sense for somebody that lives in Henderson to come here versus
sure.
go to Louisville or somewhere else, that we'll take them. And same thing with Carmi, Illinois. If they live there, we'll certainly try to accommodate them on a plane versus them going all the way to Carbondale or St. Louis or somewhere else.
I know there's an Honor Flight Kentucky, and they have flights out of Owensboro as
yep.
well. So this is a very active national network. And you said it started in Springfield, Ohio?
Started in Springfield, Ohio, yes. So it was, like I said, a couple of veterans were in a nursing home there, and they were not able to go on their own. And the staff saw the national televised opening, grand opening of the memorial, of the World War II memorial, and said, you know, we need to do something about that. If it wasn't for Honor Flight, not other Honor Flight of Southern Indiana, but just Honor Flight in general, there's a very, very large percentage of World War II veterans would not have been able to go.
So how did it go from Springfield, Ohio, to all of these, like, 40-some-odd states?
Well, it was actually, that flight actually made national news. So the veterans that went to go, they were on, Springfield, Ohio is just slightly outside of Dayton, and these medical staff that were at the nursing home also had connections there at Grissom Air Force Base and several other places. So they actually took them on a private plane, took them to Washington, D.C., and that was televised. And once that was televised, a lot of other hubs all kind of jumped on board. So,
now, how do you have a partnership with, like, the American Legion and the VFW?
Not really a formal partnership, but yes, we certainly have our brochures there. We love going into those places because that's where we get a lot of our veterans, at least initially. On most recent flight, our best advertisement is past veterans like Ray that have been on the flights talking to other veterans, talking them into it. We certainly try to have a presence at the VFW post, Legion post, AMVETS post, all the places out there that we can. So, Ray,
what message do you have for some veterans out there who may be reluctant to apply for the flight?
I would suggest to get an application and send that thing in, and it will be the most memorable thing that's going to happen with you compared to your military service.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were so many that, it was said before, that did not receive any recognition when they came home, especially the Vietnam War.
Sure.
And you'd be amazed at the crowd that greets you at Washington, D.C., at the airport. You'd be amazed at the crowd that's going to greet you when you come home to Evansville, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got the chance, take it. It's a once in a lifetime.
He's a good salesman, isn't he, Larry?
He is. Like I said, our veterans are our best salesmen.
So a final pitch here, Larry, for the Honor Flight of Southern Indiana. Why should people get involved, and what's your feedback from it?
Well, Honor Flight's been very rewarding for me, and I think that, you know, anybody that's ever gotten involved with it become our best volunteers and our best advertisement, our best funding source as well. So if you're a person that's still employed at a large corporation, many of those corporations do matching donations and stuff as well. So please check your companies if you can do that. Just everything that we do about these veterans is just keeps rewarding myself and other people that get involved with the organization. It just keeps returning the reward back to us. It's been very pleasing.
Well, gentlemen, my thanks to Larry Rogers and Ray Beckwith, sharing the good work of the many folks who are behind this effort. I mean, like you said, it takes an army of volunteers to put this on. The Honor Flight of Southern Indiana, and keep taking flight there, guys. I know this is your mission and your passion. On next week's Two Main Street, we go aboard LST 325 on its cruise from Aurora, Indiana, to its home port in Evansville. I had a chance to mingle with the crew and spend what turned out to be two sleepless nights in a lower-level bunk bed. LST 325 board member Chris Donahue invited me on board, and here's some of our conversation on the Ohio heading downriver from Louisville.
We were talking about the ship, and it is fully operational, which makes it unique among
a lot
of World War II ships.
Exactly. You know, 65, a lot of people ask about Normandy, because everybody, if you don't know a lot about World War II, you've heard of D-Day, June 6, 44. Of course, this ship was there. They say, so this was at Normandy, and of course, there's a couple of holes we can show them from German aircraft. That didn't happen at Normandy, but North Africa. And we talk about that, yes, how many tanks it can hold. And then we go back, but before Normandy, it was in North Africa, then Sicily, then Salerno, and then Normandy, where we lost, you know, the Allies lost somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 soldiers, dead and wounded in one day. And then we talk about the fact there's five beaches there, the bloodiest one. A lot of people have heard of Omaha Beach. That's where this ship was. And we could spend 2 hours on talking about the losses and how it happened at Normandy, and that's where this ship was. But so we're blessed to have the last one standing that has that kind of history behind it.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of these crew members are historians in their own right. They have a lot of history, a lot of experience being on this ship.
Oh, too. Yes. Two of the guys on here are 93, 93 and a half. Well, the one guy turned 93 and a half on the ship. They baked him a cake. And he says, well, when you hit 90, halves count. So we got two of them on here that I know of, and a whole bunch of guys, Vietnam era. A lot of these guys, on they were on LSTs in Vietnam. And you can get a lot of stories on here.
Cruising on the Ohio River aboard LST 325 with a colorful crew and surprises around every bend, including an encounter with soldiers from Fort Knox and locking through four dams en route to Evansville. All next time on 2 Main Street. To Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. And our interviews are also online at WNIN.org. To Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport.